This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you, voicemail lady. So we have Michael, Sessa Michael Morris, May Hung, Susan McCracken, John Lovell. Did I miss anyone? Awesome. We're talking Jason. Nope. It is Monday, yes. October 30th. Happy Halloween. Boo-hoo.
And, oh, it is Halloween. That's right.
Yeah, I forgot, too. I get to go out shopping. Michael,
no,
that's
tomorrow's Halloween.
Yeah. I can call you tomorrow, Michael, if you want, and I could.
No, that's all right. Yeah.
Okay. Michael, I don't know what you had planned for the agenda, but I was hoping you could give a recap because, as you know, I was next door at the meetings last week running the Ed Exchange meeting,
sure.
So I'm anxious to hear what happened. I'm not sure Alex is dialing in today, but I know he was happy and very instrumental in those meetings. So, yeah, give us a recap.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
He was very instrumental. It started out as an interesting meeting because we started the conference call in the wrong room. Alex got in the wrong room. And so we finally got the meeting going. And what we did was we went over the mission that we talked about and worked on, heard a lot of comments. And the main thing we did was remove the education statement, the education community, and replace it with our community in the mission statement. And the reason for that is that I think several people thought it was broader than that, especially with some of our workforce work that we've been doing recently, that education was too limiting in terms of our scope and our mission. So that was the main change, and just had a lot of good dialogue and discussion and talked about what the implications were of going forward with a approach that meant that we're going to change the design rules on both, well, we're going to create design rules for Jason, but we're going to modify the design rules for our XML because we want the Jason to look like Jason would look if we had started from scratch and built it instead of looking like XML. And that means things like hashtag text or at for attributes would not be included as part of any JSON design rules that we have. So it was a really good discussion. John provided some really good insight during that, and as did Alex. I can't remember exactly what Alex said. There was something I disagreed with, but I can't remember specifically what it was. And I checked my notes to see if I could see what that was. No, I don't have anything here. But aside from, and that was a little different interpretation, but I think we're ready to start now with looking at our basic design rules and our design and seeing what the implications are. So I started doing that today. I brought up XML Spy and brought in our core main schema and looked for attributes to see what the implications are for any changes we would want to make sure that we would convert our attributes to elements as a possible design rule and see what the implications of that were for PESC. And I don't think it surprised anybody, given the scarcity of attributes in our schemas, that I think there was one that was in financial aid, which is a standard that's not used anymore. There was one that's in a complex element that we're going to have to go to a higher level, the next level up of schema, to see how it's used. It's not used at all in the core main itself. And there was one other that looked like it'd be fairly innocuous to change. So just thinking about our design rules, how we do things, what PESC has been doing is it has been creating all of its associations through hierarchy and not through linking. So we also don't have a lot of linking going on. Everything's subsumed under a top level element and organized that way. So we organize as a hierarchy. So I've looked at it, and it doesn't look like the implications for making JSON pretty are going to be too formidable. So we can start discussing that. But some of you may be experts in some of your own schemas and may know of some elements that may be hard to convert. And I think John continually talks about lists, and I want to make sure I'm interpreting John correctly, is that lists, when he says lists, he means the XML list schema structure, right, where you have space-separated values in a list.
No,
that's not what you're talking about. Okay.
No. When I talk about lists, we have, I mean, it'd be like a complex element, right? What we do inside our objects, we do something else at the top level for other reasons. But what we do inside our objects is we'll say something like parent guardian list. And then inside of there, you could have everything from, you know, a simple name field to a complex parent guardian type that then repeats. And when you look at that for JSON, you know, that stuff needs to be thrown in array brackets consistently. And that getting that information across in a conversion is very tricky because, you know, if I just send you a list and it's a list of nothing or it's a list of one, you can't tell that it's a list from, you know, unless you want to rely on naming convention, which we don't, FYI. Well, we make mistakes sometimes when we build things as humans. Not everything that's a list winds up being called blah list. It's, you know, how do we convey that information? I mean, we could be, since we're coming up with design rules, that we suggest that, well, if it's a list, it always gets called list or some other, you know, prefix or suffix or something.
Right.
Such that, you know, then that information sitting there when you go to view the conversion. Our approach right now has been not doing that because we have places where we break our own rules and we say we're being judicious about it and intelligent about it. And that can mean everything from we broke it on accident, but it's a well-adopted object and we don't want to break everybody who's already adopted it, to, oh, we really have a good reason here. You know, like in our express objects, I think instead of saying lists, we make it plural. And there we make it the English plural. Out at our collections level, we have a hard and fast rule that we just add an S. And that makes it very easy to code to when the infrastructure is trying to package or unpackage or what have you it may need to do, different items to move multiple at a time and take care of lag and stuff. So we've really got three themes currently intermixed around there. So our initial reaction is let's figure out where the lists are, share that somehow, and convert them consistently. It could be that we say, you know what, it's, you know, really important these things convert consistently, and this is going to be our scheme for calling out a list, and therefore you can detect it programmatically from the data and convert it over to JSON nicely. You know, everything's on the table, I guess. But, yeah, that's what I'm referring to. It's really when you have a case and a rest.
So it's not a structure within XML. It's a way you've organized, and I'm just... So a list to you is a repeatable. I'm confused on what a list is. A repeatable element.
It's a repeatable element.
So and you have a, and you're saying that when the repeatable, and we might as well start with that one when we talk about design rules. As long as we're on it, we can go back to attributes and other issues. But that seems to be the one. From our conversation with you, that you've had the most problem with the repeatable element.
There's one other that I would put on an equal footing, but we can get to that later.
So we have repeatable items, but we don't think about them as lists that I think of. I mean, we have our if something's repeatable, it's repeatable. And so maybe it's repeatability that's a problem. So if you have zero to max to what's the term they use in XML for the maximum?
Unbounded, I think.
Unbounded, yeah, unbounded.
There we go.
In the schema, yeah.
Michael, did someone just join us? Did someone just join?
OCast.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Sean from OCast.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Good. Sorry, I'm late.
No worries. We were just jumping in. Michael Morris had done a little recap of last week, and we have John Lovell on the line from Access for Learning. He works in PK-12 and other sectors, and Mei Hong from Stanford, and Susan McCracken from the College Board, and Steve Margano from our Technical Advisory Board, and me and you. And, jump in. Michael, you and John were discussing.
Yeah, I think.
Deep dive.
So, yeah, we were just looking at the problems that A4L had identified in producing clean JSON that the JSON programmers thought looked like something they would create from scratch. So what he's saying is, so you have a repeatable object or a repeatable element, and the rule would be, even if there were zero, you would still, in JSON, produce an array. Why is that a problem
we need to talk a lot about empty things, and I'll get to why that is later. Why don't we focus on the use case of only having one thing in it, right? Because that's concrete, all the same stuff applies, people can see it, right? I've got one thing that's repeatable versus I have two things that are repeatable. Those need to show up in JSON the same way, so that just like we would use an XPath to address something in the data, they can use a JSON path to address something in the data. And that's something that's actually been a real problem for us. Does that make sense,
so,
Michael?
If you're using the schema for translation, right, you would always put, if there was zero, it would be the empty array. If there's one, it'd be one in the array. Two, it'd be two in the array. And that causes a problem for the programmer. I'm missing that.
There's two factors here, right? There's the guy who's receiving the data, and there's the guy who's serializing the data, right? The guy who's receiving the data, let's call him the JSON guy, he really needs to get a nice, consistent set of JSON, regardless of, how many things there are. That he has the same path, can address things the same way, doesn't have to write a bunch of extra if statements. Well, if I'm here and this, and if I'm there and that, all that kind of good jazz. So he wants to see those brackets consistently. So if it's empty, in our spec, it's really important he can know it's empty. That's something we want to be able to move. I was looking at Google standards to see what they do, and they just don't move it at all. That doesn't work for us in a lot of cases. We want to clear out a kid's parent guardian list. That's different than not having a parent guardian list element. That's an empty parent guardian list. I don't know if that affects you guys or not, but that's something that's really important over on the A4L side. So I'll just point that out. So yeah, you would expect to have the empty brackets, and we haven't, like I say, empties is a whole big subject that we could talk about. But while we're talking about lists, yes, I agree with you. That's what, I'm trying to convey to you, this list is empty, this repeatable element structure is empty, I would have current guardian list, and then inside of that, I would have, an empty set of brackets in JSON to say, yes, this is a list, you can address it consistently, and you can know that there's no data in there. It's actually empty versus just we don't know what to put there.
But in your semantics, you sometimes want to express there is no list at all, as opposed to being an empty list, is what you're saying, right? That's why it's a problem for you?
Yeah. It's not a problem, because then we just leave off the parent, because we always have a parent, right? There's always the thing that says, hey, this is the parent guardian list. And if we don't want to move the parent guardian list, right, like we're doing a partial, like a delta update or something for efficiency, then we just, or we strip it out for privacy reasons, we just, if we don't want to say anything about the parent guardian list for whatever reason, we just drop the parent guardian list, you know, parent element, and then if somebody goes and tries to address it, well, it's not there. No big deal. What, you know, versus the parent guardian list is there and empty. That means something totally different. That means we're actually conveying the data to you when there is no data in that list.
Does anybody think, do we, in PESC, is there any kind of way that we'd want to convey those two meetings? And I guess that gets back to your whole null notion, or just, you're saying you would actually just leave out the, let's say you had it A colon empty bracket, you'd leave out the whole thing. If you want to say that.
Depending
on
what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me throw out there, Michael. I am working on a whole slide with somebody else on empties and how we can treat this consistently so that we don't mess up the JSON paths. I don't know when it'll be ready, but this is kind of a big topic, and it's going to impact the JSON programmers pretty profoundly, whether or not they can just address things and understand what happens and what it means, versus making the decisions, like, for instance, when do we use an empty object? When do we use a blank field? When do we use a null? You know, this is a whole big topic that if you actually work through it and you try to apply the JSON paths in JavaScript, you come up with some pretty clear-cut answers. I just don't have a good visual for it yet. I've got a whole slide deck around this stuff that I don't actually have because the person I'm working with has it. I don't want us to make a one-off decision around, well, we'll do this for empty lists. I think we need to look at it in its totality. But for us, right, it's just as painful when we have one thing in the one repeatable element versus two. Because when we have two repeatable elements, it's very easy to go, oh, this needs to go into an array. Otherwise, you can't move this thing in JSON. Throw it into an array. Whereas when we just have one thing, it's like, wait a minute, is this repeatable and should be thrown into an array for consistency, or is it just sitting there by itself? Right, and you need some way to pull that out. It could be a naming convention. It could be you look at the schemas. It could be publish that metadata separately. Obviously we can have different tools and different approaches to that. I think the important things for these two groups is it winds up looking the same at the end.
So that gets back. I mean, when you originally did the Gessner, obviously. If you're just doing a translation from incident document to incident, not incident, I'm thinking about my, never mind. When you're translating directly without knowledge of the schema, then there's no way you could even know that that was an array. So,
right. Gosser makes
what,
yes,
so
right.
The So at least one thing about the translation that I think is very clear is that one of the rules is that we must use the schema to create a consistent translation. Is that fair?
That's fair. What we run into is people have a hard time working with schema to do such a thing.
Yeah.
Especially in a general sense. I think saying something like you must follow the schema, you know, not necessarily you have to write code that understands the schema in order to make these decisions, but you actually have to follow it and create repeatables consistently inside an array, right? Yeah. I mean, that all follows. How we either help people do that or say you're on your own to follow the spec and do that, this is the spec. Like I say, both groups could do a little bit differently. The important thing is that, yeah, when something's repeatable, whether it's empty, we should look at that separately. But in my mind, whether it's empty, whether it's only got one thing in it, or whether it's got two or more things in it, it needs to consistently be captured as an array in JSON. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable design rule. That's a translation design rule, but It would also be true if you were writing JSONs from scratch, right? This is something that can have 0 through N objects of some kind, objects or elements or values.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. We have to look at the JSON and the XML and figure out what makes sense on both sides.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no problem when you're going, if we want to talk about translation, when you're going from the JSON to the XML, right?
Right, right.
Because you wind up just kind of throwing those brackets away. Oh, I got this thing, that becomes the parent tag. Oh, it's got a bunch of children, I'm going to add all those children. They just become subtags. These array brackets, I don't need them anymore. It was real easy to go that direction. It's the other way around that's the problem. And that's why you have JSON developers that aren't happy with us right now. Us being Access for Linen, not pets. I can't speak for you guys.
So I had to drop off for a second. Somebody came by my cube. Hello?
Okay.
Sorry. Somebody tapped me on the shoulder. So what I was saying, we must use the cardinality in the schema for translation purposes to assure consistent. Assistant JSON. Because, yeah, a programmer would go nuts if in one time it's an array and the next time it's just a single value.
Right.
In an attribute value pair. Okay. And then the other part of that is it's more complicated because there's some other semantics you want to express other than just an empty. There's a whole null, empty, that whole thing. That's a different issue that we need to deal with, and you're working on that. Right, John?
Yeah, and I mean, from my point of view, there's actually right answers for this thing, which is important, because what we're doing currently doesn't try to follow them. Like I say, all you got to do is take it, have it be JSON, try to address it consistently with a path, and get a consistent return. And you start to realize that, you know, it really matters a lot. One of the things you tend to have to do with JSON or XML, right, is check whether that parent's there. So, you know, if you get down and there is no parent or guardian list, then, well, it's not there. You can't go and read the data. There's all kinds of libraries and coding practices where you actually make sure that what you're going to address is there. But then once that's there, you have this expectation that you can address this thing, right? Well,
yeah, that's part of the rule. If
you can address it and find out it's empty. If you've got something else there, like a null or what have you, an empty object, anything that's not expected, all of a sudden your empty case uses a different path than your, let's call it your populated case.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're writing more spaghetti code type logic. You know, well, if it's not null, then try to read it. That's not desirable. I mean, we can avoid it with a little bit of care.
Okay. So, yeah, if the object is there, then we must use cardinality in the schema to translate to assure consistent JSON. Okay. Is that fair? Everybody agree with that?
Yes.
Okay, let's go back to, and let's later on, John, you want to tell us what your other big issue is that the same level as this that you found?
What we just touched on, right, empties across the board become a big deal.
Okay, so empties is the other one,
across,
right?
It may not be as big of a deal for pass.
Yep. So, empties, nulls.
Yeah, so like in this case, we have an empty repeatable, so we wind up in JSON with an empty array, right? The same kind of thing could be true for, like, you know, another complex object that winds up being empty, but somehow we want to convey that it's empty. Complex type, not complex object. In the XML, you kind of have the same kind of problem in the JSON world, is you want to give it an empty object, you know, the curly brackets instead of the square brackets. I think the curly brackets are in play when you have arrays as well, but, you know, just to simplify it in the JSON world.
Whether to leave that out or, and if you have an array of objects, then you could have some of those objects being empty or not there at all.
But you can have just like an XML complex type, right? Like primary parent or guardian, you know, that could be pulled out in the structure and it only ever has one thing in it, but it can have first name, middle name, last name. You know, for instance, it's a big deal for us whether the middle name is there and blank or not there at all. Does the system support it? Does it not collect it? Are you telling me that they don't have a middle name? Those kinds of things. And so the same kind of thing applies there, right? If you have an empty complex type in the XML, then you should probably have an empty object on the JSON side. Once again, you address it the same way and then find out it's empty versus, and like I say, I'm working on a whole table to make these consistent and I don't have it ready yet.
Well, we'll let you do the work on that. It would save us a lot of effort. So, yeah, that is how do you express those things? And those become design rules. And that's a problem. I mean, this is one area that I'm a little weak in. I've always could never quite understand the nillable attribute in schemas, and that's always confused me. So, and it's related. That's a debate that happens in XML as well. Do I leave a empty element, or do I just leave it out if it's not repeatable? I mean, if it's zero, if you can have zero instances, why even show it? So, and
right,
they mean different things, right? So
yep.
I understand where you're coming from. Yep.
Yeah, and I think JSON has its own, I'm not the biggest JSON expert in the world. I know what the JSON looks like when I convert our XML using Gosner. And Gosner, you know, throws null into, like, all those fields that are just empty in XML. And I'm suspecting we may want to have something else. You know, this is where my table's not complete yet.
Right. Where do we do null? Where do we do empty arrays? Where do we do empty objects? Right. And what do those mean? What's the meaning of those?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Where do we omit something?
Yep.
You know, currently in SIF, if you don't support the middle name field, you don't publish the middle name field, because publishing it with an empty means this person doesn't have a middle name. You don't know that that person doesn't have a middle name. You just don't publish that field.
Yeah, good point. So a set of rules around what, and I think that applies to XML. I don't think we're consistent in that in our XML either. And how to interpret
that. I think both sides are going to benefit from this process.
Yeah, I agree. No, we'll look forward to your work. We'll get that set up so you can present that when you're ready. Looking forward to that. Okay, let's go back to the top of the list. It was good to have that discussion because that's one thing that I think we learned quite early when we were using the JAX-B translation technique, that how important it was to have the schema involved in doing that translation. And so to get consistency, that's a point that was brought up by Sam Allen on how to. Yes.
I know I've been talking a lot, but I just want to lay it out there that this whole journey that we've had using Gosner, it was all originally driven with JAXB and with it being the default in JAXB for serializing the XML to JSON. So just want you to know that is where I'm coming from as well. And we're a lot
where you started from, yeah.
Yeah, so
okay, good.
Yeah, I think it's just an interesting point for people to keep in mind. It sounds like we've started in the same place and experienced the same kind of problems. So go ahead.
Okay. So I wanted to go back to just attributes. And there is nothing comparable to an attribute in JSON as a modifier, as metadata. I mean, we think about it using it to express something about the actual element or elements that are involved there. It's we consider it metadata. It's data about the data that is being expressed. As I said, we have very few cases of attributes in our schemas. So I think, May, you're intimate with your schema on credentialing. What would be the consequences? And of course you would cease to be backward compatible, obviously, if you made attributes into elements. Is that a feasible change in design rules so that we would have no attributes in our XML?
We don't use any attribute in our case, but I do concern about enumerator. How do we translate enumerate code?
Okay, I think we're... Yeah, I mean, enumeration... the difference is it's just a restriction on values, right, in enumeration.
But we, in the past, danger, right, there's a code. For example, just
right.
Let you know that, for example, was a certificate completion. We use a code.
Right.
Similar on other places. But there's a document in XML. I just don't know how... documentation in the XML, but I don't know how we do it in the JSON.
Oh, documentation.
Yeah,
let's put that on the list of things we need to talk about is documentation.
Yeah.
Now, what you're talking about is documentation within the schema itself, right?
Correct.
The JSON schema does have a mechanism for documentation. JSON itself doesn't have there's nothing, you know, no way to put documentation into the JSON itself, but the JSON schema has semantics for documentation and for documenting particular things. It has a construct for enumeration. It has an enum construct that allow you to constrain the set of values in an enumeration by that list or by that array of items. So I think we're okay on that. But what you're saying about attributes is that shouldn't be a problem for your schemas.
Correct.
Okay. Does anybody, Steve, I know there's a few attributes used for the financial aid, but I don't think any of those standards are actively used right now, correct?
No, the department used an attribute, I think, in common origination and disbursement. And I can't recall if the FELP world adopted the attributes to enumerate the number of disbursements and a loan. But since neither of those is in use, although... Yes, I don't know if COD ever is still implemented or used by the department, but if they're not within our scope anymore, and I can't think of anyone we'd be affecting by removing attributes or converting them to an element of some sorts.
And, Steve, you're correct. They are not a consideration anymore.
Okay.
So we do have a few attributes hanging around. I think I use one in test score reporting, but that wouldn't be a problem because, there is some use of that subsets of that, is my understanding, but nobody's using the full test score reporting for anything, so that's something we probably could remove the attributes. Should we send ERUG a note saying what are the consequences? We don't have anybody on here from ERUG, right?
No, but I'm on those calls too, Michael, and they have another issue that they're going to be talking about, I think, next Wednesday, because they meet on the second Wednesday. So they're going to be adding the geocode. We're trying to figure out where to add it in the PESCAPOO standards. So it's perfect timing if you want to send Matt and Jason an email, or send it to me and I'll forward it to them, because it's
okay.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, I think the issue is, are there consequences of no attributes? Now, obviously, if there's an attribute used anywhere, we won't be backward compatible. I mean, so that's a problem. If it's a required attribute, it would certainly cause a problem. If it's not a required attribute, then we could still be backward compatible, because if they didn't use that attribute and it was an element and they didn't use that, then it wouldn't matter. But if the instance document, it wouldn't be backward compatible for any instance document that used that attribute. So that's the issue.
Michael, can you articulate that briefly and simply in an email so that the ERUG understands and can,
right.
You're leading the discussion. Because I'd also like Speedy to chime in on that.
Right, because we don't, I mean, the other thing we could do is just not make the, I mean, we could keep our attributes. That would be another design rule, but they wouldn't end up, we would not mark them specially in any way in JSON, and they just would become a property of an object. And so it wouldn't look any different than any other element. And then most of our, we're mapping elements to properties of an object. And then those can be objects or arrays or a value. So,
you're right, Michael. If you have an attribute on like a complex type, right, in the XML, you can just add it as a field. In the JSON, and life is good. It's really attributes become most problematic when they're used kind of, usually it's in kind of a name value pairing and a structure in the XML. It's where, you know, okay, I've got name, and then I've got a type modifier that tells you if it's the primary name or an alias, if it's, you know, a nickname, you know, whatever the type is, and then it has, you know, it just takes the name as the content of that tag. That's where it's like, well, then where do I put this, right? That's the use case where you wind up with
right.
The Gaussian notation. Well, this is at this, and then the text is that. So that's what's most disruptive, right? I think it's important to keep in mind that we can have some baby steps as we do this if there's a real pain point, but it's not that kind of pain point. You know, you could initially, you know, stash it as a field in the JSON and create consistent JSON, but for a while, still, while people transition, you know, you can even do it in the schema where you can have it either place in the XML and then eventually, you know, pull out the attribute, mark it as deprecated. It depends on what, you know, your policies and procedures for moving things like that forward are. The other thing is, if you do use Gosner, ironically enough, right, the disruptive ones are actually the ones that aren't required. They create inconsistent paths again, whereas the required ones, at least you get consistency. I'm not saying, you know, I think our stuff's going to look different. I think everything you've said is right. I think it's interesting to note that, hey, well, yeah, if you've got this XML and you weren't supporting that attribute anyway, well, then it doesn't break is, you know, something that might help you. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there that, you know, there's multiple ways to look at these things. And if you look at it through the Gosner lens, it's like, oh, what you're saying is totally wrong. But yeah, I get what you're saying. You're not wrong. And the other thing I'll throw out there is, you know, for aphoralis is a huge deal. We have a lot of linked data, and every object has at least one attribute for linking data that's, you know, done this way. So it's going to impact every object we have, even the ones that we cleaned up and made. The whole point in really cleaning them up and simplifying them was that it would convert to JSON at least a whole lot more consistently. So, you know, this is one of these places where I think you can move faster than we can. I just want you to be aware it's going to be a big issue for us, and it's going to take us time to address this.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I think you have the wrong approach or the wrong idea.
But we do have a lot of textual elements that, I mean, if we did have attributes on those are the problems. Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. If it's not required, I understand that now. Yep. Good point. Okay. Any other discussion on attributes? So what I'm saying, where we should move to is, at least for PESC, and obviously John's going to make different decisions because of the complexity of what they have in terms of the linking, is that we would have a design rule that said no attributes in XML if you're ever going to use this in JSON. And maybe that would just be a strict prohibition of attributes, which I think it's really a beautiful technique for metadata, for qualifying your data that's included. But on the other hand, if we want these to look clean, they could look a little ugly to have a qualifier as one element, but we do that all the time. I think we have cases where we have something that qualifies another element as part of a complex type. So I think we have enough of that already in our semantics that we wouldn't be breaking any rules or creating new ground. So I'd be comfortable with that. But the rest of you need to think about that if that's one of our design rules, is no attributes.
So, Michael, I think we should capture that now. I think that is what we're saying now. I think there's going to be, you know, pain from my side in getting there. And so, you know, be aware that, you know, we'll probably have a multi-step process to get there from my side. But I think ultimately that is the right end goal if we're really serious about having JSON that doesn't look like XML. I think it's also important that we, you know, not try to have XML that looks like JSON. But, you know, quite frankly, having the elements is simpler in XML if you don't use attributes, consistent slashes. Sometimes the paths get a little bit longer, but I don't think it has a big negative impact on the XML once you've done it. It's just knowing that you can't use that particular XML tool with these sets of rules.
Okay, where are we on time? I guess we can get started on this one. The next one that occurs to me is that in all of our complex types, we almost always use sequence. And when you're looking at XML versus JSON, the properties don't have an order within an object. So that sequence constraint doesn't apply. Are we actually losing semantics, or is sequence just something that makes it easier to use a parser on XML because you can start first, second, third, or it, instead of naming the element, you can iterate through them. Is that the reason that sequence would be important? I mean, or are we conveying the same semantics in both if we don't really care what the order of the properties is in JSON? Just a question.
Does anybody want to get Michael?
Well, when you think about your schemas, and you have a complex type, let's say X, and you have element A, B, C under that element, right? Children, elements. In our schema in XML, we say there's a sequence, and so A always has to come before B, which always has to come before C in our instance document. In JSON, that's not the case. If you translate to a JSON object, you're referencing those by their property name and not by their order. Their order is irrelevant. And in fact, sometimes JSON does return elements in different order than you might expect, and that doesn't seem to bother people since they're referring to them by their name, each of those properties. So the point is sequence, do we just use sequence for convenience, or is there any time that sequence means anything important in terms of the order of those elements? Is the order of elements important?
So
in terms of meaning, semantics.
Yeah. So Michael,
yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm literally of two minds on this. From a personal perspective, doesn't matter much, right? Because I'm going to address this stuff by paths, whether I'm using JSON or XML. And as long as it's in the right path, it's going to resolve, it's going to work. Then we get to the fact that it's not like that, there isn't, in my mind, an alternative to using sequence on the XML side, right?
Right, right.
It is the most generic thing, and it has this rule around it that these things are in this order. And from an A for L perspective, we publish these schemas. We validate against these schemas. The XML's got to be in that order to not throw a validation rule. So for me, it's not something that I created to create, but from my point of view, it's something I have to honor because my hands are tied, right? And we talk about, we got to do these things for JSON to make the JSON nice. Well, we may have to do this one for the XML to make the XML nice because it's not going to play with its own schemas if it starts getting stuff in random order. I don't think we want to, I'm perfectly happy to say, you've got to know when something's repeatable to create a consistent structure in JSON. I'm not as happy to say you got to know when things are out of order so you can fix them up before they go to XML. I mean, that talk about a heavyweight operation and something you got to check everywhere instead of just, hey, is this thing a list? It's a whole nother scope of problem. And then even beyond that, there, just because I have a certain methodology and I address things with paths doesn't mean everyone who's adopted our standards does the same thing. And I have talked at length with people. I mean, what I was originally hired to do here was run the testing system and a certification system at Access for Learning. And I'll have people contact me saying, we've done this thing, and we've coded it up, and it works this way. Now, how do we do this? And not using the path approach causes people a lot of angst. And they say, I would do it based on paths instead of based on order. But the truth of the matter is we've got, several people out there following our specs that say, hey, the XML schema is the spec. You use sequence. It should be in this order. I'm going to address it or parse it by order. Doesn't mean I agree with that decision, but that is following the spec and making it work currently. I think just like what we've said, hey, if you're going to go from the XML to the JSON and put the brackets, you need to put the brackets around it if you got something that's repeatable. whether it's empty, has one thing, or has multiple things. We've got to figure that one out. I think this is something where we might say, hey, if you're going to do JSON, you've got to honor the order, because there isn't a good way to express the XML rules, at least with the tools I think both of our standards currently use, any other way. It's not like, you know, I, instead of choosing sequence, I can choose pile of stuff, right?
Right. Yeah.
There isn't a straightforward pile of stuff thing. You can mix like choice, which has poor tool support, and some other things that have poor tool support, and create a pile of stuff, technically an XML schema, but you're just doing more harm than good. So I think this is one of the places where, yeah, just like JSON requires you have these nice square brackets, XML requires we keep things in order. That's where I'm coming down from, you know, with my practical hat on. Like I say, in my ivory tower, I'm going to address it by attributes. It doesn't matter.
Leaving the meeting.
Hey, guys.
This is McCracken.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to jump in as we're approaching the hour. And,
right.
Michael, check in and see what next steps there are or what homework you might issue over the listserv. I'm sorry to cut you off, but Susan had just emailed me saying she's going to drop off, and I anticipate.
Yeah, everybody has to drop off, yes.
That's fine.
I'll send something out for next week. Get an agenda together, because I'm trying to look at all of the features within XML to see what we can go through and talk about. And I think the sequence is a valid one, that our rules, the order would matter in that we'd produce the same order in JSON as XML, but the issue is that it's not going to really matter what the order is as long as the order is consistent between the two. So, okay. Yeah, let me think through what other, I got through the ones that I was interested in, and I did want to find out more about John's list. So, I think some of the features within, and we're not talking about schemas yet, but if we ever start doing JSON schemas, there's a set of rules within XML schemas that are hard to model in JSON schemas. So we could do those, but I want to just start with the elements first. Okay, thank you all for participating, and then we'll be back next week and talk about some more of this stuff. We'll start writing these rules out. I'll get the minutes out.
Yep, awesome.
Tomorrow.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, John. I thought that was a really valuable conversation today.
Yes.
I really do. And we're going to pick up steam, and I hope we had some steam last week in the call. I don't know how many people were on, Michael, but...
There were a few new people, yep.
Yep, and I added a bunch of new people to the listserv. So, you know, we'll keep doing the recordings. I think people are connected. They might not always dial in, but they're connected. So good job, and let's keep going.
Okay, great.
Awesome. So we'll talk next week.
See you next week.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.